want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross-country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed.
Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Jet by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have part two with Dan Abraham. I'm sorry to break it up in two parts. I just think 40 minutes is a great time to be listening, and it's not too long. So this part is part two with the rest of what we were talking about. Once again, either this part or the next episode, I say a curse word. I am sorry. I say it twice, but I'm not going to reveal too much more. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
As a parent trying to build up our players, how do you advise us to ask questions to help them think about it other than trying to serve our own purpose? Because doing this, I get exposed to so much more than I feel like the average parent on the sideline. And I don't know how to turn the brain off, so to speak, and just ask questions.
Yeah, I think you're being very honest there. And I think that's really important as a parent, is to have that sense of self-awareness. Self-awareness as a parent is really important in terms, in attempts to be the very best that you can be as a parent for your child. And again, I think it's recognizing, I'm going to come around to answering your question directly, but I think this starts with recognizing that as a parent, you're a human being, and your default is always going to be to want to be to the best things for the best for your child. And you're going to come up with these thoughts going to emerge in your mind of what might be the best. And so, of course, you're going to probably often act on that. Now, it sounds to me like you're trying to envelope that urge in the skill of asking questions. But there's two types of questions in very simple terms. There's convergent questions and there's divergent questions. So think about, and this really draws on human intelligence, convergence and divergency. And so convergent thinking or convergent questions are, I know the answer, or I have an answer in my head, and I want you to arrive at that answer. So I'm going to ask you questions until you arrive at this answer. That's the kind of questions you're talking about. And look, sometimes there is an appropriate form of questioning to have. However, arguably a more sophisticated way to approach this would be divergent questions, which is really just diving into the experience your child is having. Hey, you chose to, and I'm going to think of something random here, maybe you can think of a better example, but hey, you took a shot there rather than played the pass, or you played the pass rather than take the shot. What were you seeing there? What were you thinking there? What did you see that made you make that decision? Could be a question that you asked. Now, that is a divergent question because you can't answer that question. You don't know what your child was seeing there. So it gives your child an opportunity to think about what they were seeing and then comment on that. And of course, you can follow that up with, were there other things that you might have scanned there that would have enabled you to see other cues, as an example? And so you're still staying on a side of divergency because your child has to answer in terms of whether there are other things that they could see. So I think divergent questions are really, really important. It's basically you acting from a point of ignorance, for not knowing. And you aren't in your child's world. You can't see what they're seeing. You can't think what they're thinking. And thinking for them and seeing for them isn't necessarily to their favor. They have to work this out on their own. I think if you want to, so I think divergent questions are really, really important. And I think with that, if your child doesn't want to engage, doesn't want to talk about it, I do think you have to give them space. You can't, I'm not a believer that you can force this on your child. Of course, there is a time to say to a young person, hey, look, you've said you're taking this seriously and you're spending a lot of time doing this. It's important that we have these conversations. It's important that you answer these questions. If there's somebody else you want to ask these questions, then absolutely fine. But I'm just asking questions that I think are important for your development, for you to think about, because you're taking this seriously. So I think there is a time to challenge the young person in front of you if they're not willing to engage in questions. But you can't force things necessarily on a young person. If that makes sense. I think that's important. Now, I think also for a parent, if you do have something to say, then it can be a very light way to do this would be to ask permission. Hey, buddy, I saw a few things out there that might be useful. I'm not sure if they are. Perhaps you can tell me if they're not, or you can give me a reason why they're not. But can I give you a couple of suggestions based on what I saw? Just ask permission. And if they say no, I think often what you find is you tap a child's curiosity. They'll eventually say yes, even if they say no first. Seeking permission to provide some coaching points can be a good idea. Or just seeking permission to make some suggestions is also a good way. Hey, it's just a suggestion. It's just an idea. It might not suit you, but it's just out there. I saw it. Here's a suggestion. So you're doing it in a very light way. I think those are good tools, suggestions, questions, divergent questions. Those are useful tools for parental engagement. But again, I think it's important for a parent to stand back and remember it's the child's experience that is important here. And just, I think with it, the final thing to say here is just because you see it doesn't make it right. Or just because it's your lens of the world doesn't make it right for your child. And that's not to say there's no objective fact in sport. There is objectivity. There are rules. There are probably some forms of optimal movements. There are borders. There are boundaries. There are certain tactical processes that might be more optimal than others. All of those things probably exist, and certainly the rules exist, right? So objectivity can matter, but people experience objectivity through their own lens, through their subjective lens. You've got to remember, some of the best sports people on earth are the best in part because they create their own reality, because they're enormously creative. You do have to bear that in mind, is when you tell your child what to do, you have to remember that is your lens of the world, and that might not be optimal for them. And this is particularly relevant for a sport like golf that I come from. Some of the best players in the world have the funkiest swings. As the old saying goes in golf, they look like an octopus falling out of a tree, some of them. They're so funky, but they win multi-million pounds, multiple millions, million dollars per year. So I had quite a uniform swing, couldn't win anything. Be careful. Be careful of what you think a truth or a fact is, because there's very few of them.
You hit on a couple of things. As a parent, I took some advice from a coach that gave me. He goes, pressure your son. Pressure your player until they tell you to back off. Okay. And it's to learn to teach them the boundary of knowing that it's okay. And I celebrated that moment with my son when I was telling him too much. And I still bring it up every single time. I go, Landon, you can never tell me that you don't want to talk about soccer. I go, if we're talking too much about it, tell me to be quiet. And remember the time that you told me we talked too much and we celebrated it? And he goes, yes. And I go, was I mad at you? He goes, no. And I go, remember that moment, because at the end of the day, that's the moment I want you to remember. And he will tell me now, like I always ask him, like, what do you want to talk about? And now it's listening to podcasts, and he'll want to listen to, he's started listening to yours, and because we're in the car quite a bit, and when we're together, and he'll listen to yours or a few others that are local for the local FC Dallas team here. And he is starting to now really enjoy the conversation. But you touched on something that I think is very important, is the creativity. And I think when we are raising our players and being, going back to that, I can never pronounce it, bio, psycho, and social side of everything, it is a thing that we have to think about when we're trying to develop our players as parents. Because at the end of the day, I think the big thing that I think helps my son now, and it didn't work well the first few times, but it's going over, and I would like you to talk about it. I know it's in your book, and if it's in chapter 4 through 6 is where you can get this in his Talk Soccer Tough book. I wish I actually had a physical copy. I've listened to this book probably a dozen times now, audiobook, and to me, these are the chapters that hit me the most as a parent. And it talks about creating a mental script.
Yep.
We as parents destroy this mental script. I don't want to hear, unless you're one of these phenomenal parents that are, I hate to use the word unicorn out there, that truly understand this side of the game. But we destroy our kids' mental script they have of themselves. And the other side of this is the game face. Mm-hmm. And you talk heavily about this. I've gone through, I can't tell you how many screenshots I have gone through last night looking at things I've screenshotted from your site that all relate to these two topics. And to me as a parent, these two, even my six-year-old daughter wants to do one because I'm doing one with my son. And we make her pick out her three items that she wants to focus on during her game and what's important to her. And I know they aren't supposed to be specific, like keeping your hands up. You talked about that in the book. Or it is more of, like I used the word aggression with my son. You need to go out there and be aggressive. And so I have him break down what that means to him and communicate on the pitch. So now, like he picked his tiger for his game face. And I just yell tiger on the sideline. That's all I tell him. I don't yell anything else at him. And he knows exactly what I'm saying. And for the longest time, we always had sayings. BG is take your anger out on the ball on the ground. I would yell BG. He knew exactly what I was saying. He was angry. Go take it out on the ball on the ground. These were simple little things. Or please, I'll have to put an explicit on this episode. You practice like shit. You play like shit. And we came to an understanding. We use curse words every now and then to enforce the importance of it in our home. And that is something that I told him. I'll just yell, please. And he knows exactly what I'm saying. Like, I don't need to have him be thinking of anything. And he really appreciates it because it's not embarrassing. It's just words. And they don't mean much to anyone else. Yep. But now I just yell tiger because that just covers it all. And these are the things that as a parent, trying to elevate my player to be the best Landon he can be. And my daughter, I have some things I yelled to her. I just tell her to be more aggressive or don't be scared. And that's it. Like, I'm not going to coach her because she knows what to do. She knows where she needs to go. I'm just trying to help her with her the emotional side, because at the end of the day, they're 6 and 7, and she's seven here in a couple of weeks, and he's 10, and it'll be 11 in a few months. And to me, that just, if we can help them with the emotional side, kids are smarter than we give them credit for. And that's the thing I think we as parents miss. We're so consumed on how many Maradonas they can do or stepovers or scissors. We forget the emotional side and the intellectual side of this, because I love watching games where you know kids that practice with all these programs that are like dribble up. I'm not knocking them, I'm just using them as an example, or watch all these videos online, but never actually go apply them. I don't know if I heard it from one of your episodes or someone else, but it was, if you're going to teach a skill, they have to use it within 10 minutes. Otherwise, they lose it. And it doesn't matter what age level. It could be an adult. It could be a six-year-old. And as parents, how do we help them on the emotional side, like with their mental script and their game face? And these two things were, as a parent, were so critical to me. If I would show you my phone, and this is what I'm telling everyone, go follow his social media, go follow his LinkedIn account, because between the two, he's posting stuff at some crazy hours, and I have no clue when this man sleeps.
I have no life. If you find me on LinkedIn or Facebook, I post on the hour 24 hours. So obviously I do them in advance. Right. I'm not awake for 24 hours.
That's what I'm getting at. I mean, yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's a commitment. It's sort of a commitment, but I love what I do and I want to put these messages out there, and I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that I'm the oracle, that there aren't. I enjoy some of the checks and challenges that I get from people, which are always very, by and large, I would say are always very fair. Sometimes there's rude people over there, obviously on social media, but I enjoy the checks and challenges as well. Let's come back to your questions. You're speaking to, so thank you for mentioning my book, Soccer Tough, which I wrote back in 2012. And then I wrote Soccer Tough 2, which was the ingenious name my publisher and I came up with as a follow-up to Soccer Tough, Soccer Tough 2. And in both of those, go in a number of directions, but two of which are that players need what I call a match script, which are attentional cues. So it's helping people to create appropriate attentional cues, and those attentional cues need to be specific, controllable, and positive. Rather than just want to win, got to perform, want to score if I'm a striker, or got to keep a clean sheet, don't want to make mistakes, got to complete all of my passes. It's actually inviting people to develop the ability to write a match script with specific, controllable, positive plays in their script that make up their cues. And I invite people to have sort of 2 to 3 attentional cues. So that's the first thing there. And that aligns itself nicely with sports psychology theory. There's a theory called achievement goal theory that draws back to your let's stop focusing too much on winning. What we know now is the best. They do want to perform well. Of course they want to perform well, but they have a very, what we call high task orientation. So that's the posh term for basic. They're focused on their actions that are really specific, that they can control, or at least get really close to controlling. And they're focusing on what they want to do rather than what they don't want to do. So that's a match script. And then there's a game face. And I think a game face is the most powerful mental technique that I've devised over the years. And it draws on a number of psychological theory and a number of research articles. And a game face is essentially, well, it's multiple things, actually. It's your competitive persona. It's your optimal or your best mental state. It's an attitudinal guide. It's like a behavioral blueprint. It can be considered as a confidence template, and it can be considered as a physical optimizer. So that's what a game face is. And I will give you, I love the fact that listening to what you said, it sounds like your son has a game face of aggressive vocal tiger, because you mentioned aggressive and you talked about wanting to communicate or needing to communicate, and then tiger's important. So aggressive tiger, aggressive vocal tiger. A game face consists of a couple of action-based words. Action words are important because, as the name suggests, they mediate actions. They're adjectives that mediate nouns. So action-based words: alert, alive, lively, relentless, focused, calm, cool, relaxed, aggressive, assertive, and so on and so forth. Athletic. Action-based words combined with either a model player or a concept, like an animal. So I say a concept, but usually people pick animals like a lion or a leopard or a cheetah. And you combine those, like your son being aggressive, vocal, tiger. I work with one of the best strikers in the Premier League. He has a game face of confident, relentless lion. Confident, relentless lion. So he liked the idea of having a couple of action words. His word, confident, relentless. And he picked a lion. Because he said, Dan, when I think about it, he had a little bit of a laugh when I asked him to pick an animal. But then when he really thought about it, he said, I'm the king of that penalty area. I'm in charge. I'm in control. I'm the king out there. Just like the lion is the king of the jungle. Now, see, this is the interesting thing and the powerful thing about a game face is basically what you're helping somebody create is a pictorial metaphor or a linguistic representation of who they want to be and how they want to act. But the pictorial metaphor idea is interesting because that's how our brains predominantly work, metaphorically. In fact, I believe you can draw on the work of a cognitive linguist called Professor George Lakoff, who's now retired. He was at University of Berkeley for most of his career. And he did this science back in the 70s. And he demonstrated that I think around 70% of language is metaphorical. And so we can use metaphors to really influence how we think and emote and feel and how our brain functions and how we behave. So when this player, this striker, this English striker is thinking confident, relentless lion, or when your son is thinking aggressive, vocal tiger, and when you're saying tiger from the sidelines, his brain is firing, reminding him of how a tiger might respond or behave. A tiger is fast and quick and a predator. And it's a wonderful way to evoke pictures and evoke images and feelings that align with how we want to potentially behave. So this is why a game face is really, really powerful. And my most recent consultancy gig, as I mentioned earlier, when I introduced myself, was with Feyenoord in the Dutch Eredivisie. Now, we won the Dutch championship. We won the Dutch Cup the next season. As I said, I worked with Arne Slot, and Arne, who's now head coach of Liverpool, really liked this tool, this game face idea, because it gave his players something, and just about, not every single player, but just about every single player had a game face. A fairly famous player in that team had a game face. I think it was something like positive, upbeat Benzema. Positive, upbeat as in the former French and Real Madrid striker. Karim Benzema, he was World Player of the Year one year, won the Ballon d'Or. So even the best players in the world like to pick model players. They appreciate their contemporaries. And where the model player, why the model player works so well, is because it's to do with social learning. That's how we learn about so many things. That's how we pick up so many skills, is we socially learn. So including a player, incorporating a player, like I work with somebody who's a professional player and he has a game face. What's his game face? Positive, relentless Terry, as in John Terry, the former Chelsea centre-back. Positive, relentless Terry. Because John Terry, for him, evokes that image of assertiveness and aggressiveness and getting to the ball first and winning the 50-50 and being in charge of that penalty area. So a game face is this pictorial metaphor, linguistic representation. It's so powerful. And it's wonderful to hear that you're utilizing this because, again, it's, and as you said, you've got to a place now where you can just say tiger and that evokes so many pictures and feelings in your son's mind that helps him to manage himself. And that's very, very powerful for a child, because what we know about children is, as I said, they have a child's brain. And so the emotional side of things is very challenging to manage for them. And so with these little tools, action-based words, model players, animals, concepts, having a match script, all of these things serve to be able to help them self-regulate, self-control, self-manage. And that's absolutely critical. It's about taking their mind away from gotta win, gotta win, gotta win, gotta perform, gotta perform, gotta perform, to I'm going to go out and have so much fun being aggressive, vocal tiger. What does that look like? What's that feel like? I'm going to go out in every activity and be aggressive, vocal tiger, nonstop. Nothing and no one's going to take me away from that. But fun and enjoyment have to be at the heart of that. I'm going to love every second and every action moving aggressive and aggressive tiger, aggressive tiger, aggressive tiger. That's who I am. That's what I do. So you see how we can construct a world. We can construct a world in that way. And that's what I do as a psychologist, is I help players construct a world. And just one more thing to add here, and this comes back to almost the very thing you want me to emphasize throughout this podcast, which is this idea of worrying less about winning. I can assure parents out there listening in that even at the very highest level, whether that's the Premier League footballers, whether it's the NBA basketball players, whether it's the NFL American football players, whether it's the Olympians that you would have seen in Paris over the summer, the vast majority of the psychology of the work that they're doing, and these days, the vast majority of these players do engage in sports psychology in some shape or form. The vast majority of them are now able to flex their mind away from winning and away from gotta perform, gotta perform, and more onto much more sophisticated processes that enable them to focus correctly, to pay attention and stay connected to the game, that enable them to manage their emotions and stay at the right level of intensity, that enable them to stay on the front foot and play brave and creative and risk-taking, but still keep to the game plan. These people are engaging in sports psychology and they're learning about getting away from winning in order to serve their capacity to be on a winning side.
You got me thinking. On Friday, you posted something about on LinkedIn. It was performance accomplishments, efficacious learning, verbal engagement, and emotional state. And you're talking about how these players can, and it's like this little diagram, looks like a spaceship. And it really, that's what came to mind. It was reading that from this past week on Friday, and here you're talking about kind of the same thing. At the end, it's the behavior and performance that comes out. It's the end product of it all. And I think we as parents and trying to help our players and even coaches trying to help the players in front of them, I think we tend to forget all those underlining factors.
You go on to your next, if I may interject, that post was based on Professor Albert Bandura's self-efficacy theory. Self-efficacy is situational self-confidence. Self-confidence is dominated by four things. There's more, but let's call it four things: past experience, verbal persuasion, vicarious experiences in seeing others do it, and emotional experiences. And this theory, he died a couple of years ago as a nonagenarian, so he got into his 90s, and he was an incredible psychologist, one of the leading 20th century psychologists out there, although he only passed away a couple of years ago. And he worked on this theory for 50 years, but this was 1967 that he formulated this. So this is going back 60 years, right? This is not new. So this is out there, this stuff. And this is why I post this stuff, because there's lots of different theories that I can draw on to keep reinforcing, whether it's achievement goal theory or whether it's self-efficacy theory. But these are posh terms wrapped up for the kind of things that we're talking about here. Sorry to interject, but it's really important to say this stuff is out there and has been out there for years.
It's just fascinating to me because this is where I've spent my last year. And I was actually, I interviewed a sports psychologist, one of my first ones, and she talked about she does better when there's no pressure to win. Like, she will win her competitions when she has no pressure to win. And I think that script has been flipped from over the years. We're seeing it more. Let's take the pressure off winning and focus on, I think you have it in your book, it's the three Fs.
Fun, freedom, and focus.
Focus. And my son puts that in his mental script right now, is making sure he goes out there and does that. Because that's, and I go, which is the most important? And this is my question, is regarding the mental script. You said only three. I struggle as a parent because you don't want to overload the frontal. You break it down all science-y.
Frontal cortex.
Yeah, frontal cortex. You don't want to overwhelm it. I try to have him have, I always try to stop at three, but he wants to add more because he has ideas. And he normally ends up with five. It started with six, and now we're down to five. And the goal is to get to three. But all of them are interrelated. It's trying to build his confidence. And can they do more than three, or is that the three is the magic number? Yeah. Or is it player to player specific?
Three is really based on, there's something called working memory that we have. Working memory is our, in essence, our mental workspace. So what we can pretty safely say is we can hold about three complex chunks of information at any given time, approximately, right? And there's individual differences, of course there is. I think the science back in the 1970s, it was the model by Atkinson and Shiffrin, talked about seven digits plus or minus two. So it's seven basic digits, but basically three chunks of complex information. And that's why I put it around three. But look, there's individual differences and there's individual preferences. So if somebody says, I want to have a match script, and here are five cues or plays in the match script, that's absolutely fine. No worries at all. And it's not as if a player is going to be thinking of those or computing those at every single point of a game. That's not the point here. But these are prompts that players can utilize to come back to at any given time, where they can instruct themselves or direct themselves or manage themselves at any given time. And those, the script can be related to strengths, they can be related to things that you're trying to improve, they can be action-oriented and technically based or tactically based, they could be physical, they could be mental. So it's quite open. The main thing is that they are as specific as possible, they are as controllable as possible, and they're expressed positively. So those are the main things here. So if your son has five, that's absolutely fine. Let him go with that. Brilliant. Fantastic. What you can do is use this from a reflective perspective, a feedback loop. So if he's got five, what he can do is give himself a mark out of 10 for each of those things after every game. And so in that way, again, we come back to the parent conversation with the child. You can arrange and agree upon a reflective practice after each game at the right time. It doesn't have to be directly after. It could be a day later. Mark out of 10 for each point. What went well? What can go better next time? And that can be a really cool way to engage your kid in those things. Do they want to change it for next time? Do they want to keep the same points? And if they don't want to do it this week because they're a bit tight, that's fine. That's no worries. Okay. We'll do it next week or we'll do it tomorrow. But in that way, you're helping them be a student of the game and a student of their game. And again, rather than did you win, did you not win, did you perform well, did you not perform well, and rather than here's my bunch of my ideas because I've been watching you and I'm like Jose Mourinho or Emma Hayes, I know the game. It's more, hey, we've got these five cues, three cues, four cues. Let's just give ourselves, let's think about these. I think that's vital.
I find it to be important. Yeah, my wife actually said, write yourself after the game. That's what we'll talk about. And then we won't talk about, he has a notebook, a composition notebook that he keeps it all in now. I'm really using what you put in your book and trying to make him do it. I also do this with him before we go to all the car with his mental script. And as a parent, I use this for school also. What's your mental script for school? Like I said, this just does not just apply. You talked about it in your book. You talk about it in your podcast that this is not life lessons just for the sports. It's life lessons.
It's corporate as well. Do this in a corporate environment. I help people have a game face in corporate environments and a match. And I call it a task script, but it's the same thing.
Yep. I can see, and I'm trying to apply this not just to soccer, because I'm obsessed with this beautiful game, and that's where my faults are. But my very last question for you, and this is can be anyone, but because you've played golf professionally and with your career, who has been the greatest influence for you as a golfer? That's your background. And who's been the greatest influence for you as a sports psychologist?
Let me start with sports psychology first, because that's the easiest.
Psychology, sorry.
I'll start with psychology first. That's the easiest. There's an American sports psychologist called Dr. Bob Rotella. Dr. Bob Rotella. And Bob wrote a book. He's written a number of books, but he wrote quite a pioneering book in the mid-90s. I think it was 95 it came out, called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. It is about golf, but I know for a fact many athletes and coaches across sports picked up this book. And it was the first sports psychology book, I believe, to come along by a mainstream sports psychologist who wrote a book that wasn't an academic text and didn't have any references and didn't allude to academic work. It was narrative, and he obviously got permission from his clients, who were plentiful, to talk about the work he was doing with them. And that's what I based Soccer Tough on, and what I based my books on, is trying to bring this alive for people. So Bob was very much the first person to come along and do that. And whilst I might very respectfully disagree with some of his philosophies and approaches, I would say that he's should be a hero for most of us in sports psychology, because I think he definitely broke down barriers, and that's something I'm continuing to try to do in my career. In golf, wow, that's tough. I don't know, you know, I really don't. Because for a long time, I would have said he's a couple of years older than me, but Tiger Woods was so big. I think growing up, my big hero as an Englishman, when I look at my own sport of golf, that it would be somebody called Nick Faldo. Nick Faldo, because he was knighted here, Sir Nick Faldo. He won 6 major championships, and he got to world number one for a number of years. And he was world's best early 90s. It's a very interesting dynamic for me, because he was an enormously intense person, enormous work ethic. And actually, on the one hand, his approach shaped and helped me, and the other hand, it shaped and hindered me, because I was way too intense about my practice and my golf, and actually that hindered a lot of my... I would never have been good enough to get into, say, the world's top 500 even. Like, I would not have scratched that surface. I'm happy to admit that, but I definitely was hindered by the fact that this person was my hero, because I felt I had to obliterate everything else in life and just practice golf and just play golf, and I had to work 10 hours a day at it and have bleeding hands at the end of the day. And I was a worse golfer at 24 than I was at 17. It, as a consequence of that, so it's quite surprising for me to say this was my hero, but I can't help but it's entrenched within me. He was my hero. And then Tiger came along with his enormous work ethic. And unfortunately, there were other things in his life that perhaps get in the way of him being a hero for many people. But he's a product of his upbringing and background as well. So I think Sir Nick Faldo, Tiger, there's so many interesting athletes out there over the years who you look at and you go, wow, you know, just incredible. But they're human beings.
Now, where can we find all of your ways to find you? I know that there's all the social medias, your website. So if you could just share all that information really quickly.
Firstly, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today. Honored and delighted. First and foremost, my website is danabrahams.com. And you can find all the information you need about me if you'd like to get in touch to potentially do some work. I work with anybody who would like to work with me. And my academy can be found on there as well. And you can also find links to my books that link you to all good online retailers like Amazon. I write every day, as we've mentioned. In fact, I write vociferously. I write at least 4 articles a day on LinkedIn. I post every hour on the hour on Facebook, and that's from a small piece to a video to audio, to something about my podcast, to all kinds of things. So if you find me on LinkedIn, just Dan Abrahams, just you'll find me like that. Find me on Facebook at Dan Abrahams Soccer, at Dan Abrahams Soccer. I also have an Instagram account, at Dan Abrahams Sport, at Dan Abrahams Sport. And then I actually have a number of X accounts, but the main one would be at Dan Abrahams 77, giving away my age there, year I was born, but at Dan Abrahams 77, where again, I'm very active there as well. And my podcast is The Sport Psych Show. And it's a deep dive. Be warned, it is a deep dive. I speak to professors and academics predominantly because I think that's an interesting space, that there's lots of great academic work that doesn't see the light of day, that coaches especially would do well to start paying attention to. So we really try to break down some pretty complicated material that I think anybody can absolutely utilize. But it is a case of being patient and patiently making your way through it. So The Sport Psych Show. So that's me. That's all of my links. And thank you so much.
Hey, everyone. I hope you enjoy this two-part series with Dan Abraham. For me as a parent, this is unlimited access to people that can answer my questions that I am struggling with as a parent. And at times, we change in ebb and flow, and these conversations get really great and really in-depth. And Dan is a plethora of information. His books are phenomenal. His podcast, I absolutely love. It's one of the few that when I get in the car, I know I'm turning it on and I'm listening to at least half an episode or a full episode, depending on my drive. And it's one I would recommend for everyone because there's a lot of different guests. I have my favorites so far. And he has over 300 episodes, and most of them are an hour plus. So let me tell you, when you're busy at work, want something to put on the background, and you want to listen to something, these are great episodes because you can absorb it. And I normally listen to them two times, sometimes three times, trying to absorb it all. There's so much information he shared in this two-part series. There's so much information that he does share free. If you go to his LinkedIn or his Facebook, his X account, you will find that he's constantly releasing information, and it's such great information. And I hope you take time to go check him out, check his book out, all that he's doing with this beautiful game that we all love with our kids, but it just doesn't apply to soccer. I take this stuff and take it into work because it works in the office place. It works on the gymnastic mat. It works in your family dynamics. It's just trying to figure it out and trying to figure out how it applies and how to help yourself. So that being said, I hope you check everything that he does out, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.